Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the second episode of our seventh season. And joining me today, Robin, is Martin.
Hello, Robin. How are you doing?
I'm all right, Martin. I think I'm better than you. You've had been under the weather, haven't you?
Well, yeah, we were supposed to be in real time recording this yesterday. I had no voice, literally no voice. And actually, I'm surprised it's recovered this quickly. I'm able to do it today. Yeah. So if I'm hacking away at some point, do forgive me, people at home. But
I apologize very much if I end up wrecking your voice again by making you talk.
It doesn't matter about
web sleuths that ruined people's lives.
Goodness me.
A bit of a sad topic. Oof,
yeah, heavy one. A heavy one for sure. Mm.
Very much a 21st century one, though. Very much of our time. Not the kind of thing that you would get in, say, 1500. I imagine.
No, true. Although, rumors, as I'm sure some of these would be related to, you know, rumors or, that happened back in the day, didn't it? Oh, Deirdre over there, she's a witch. That gets spread around. Yeah. You're sleuthing on someone, accusing them of something, potentially. Mm. Mm, then Deirdre, before you know it, is sinking at the bottom of the lake. Of course, she wasn't a witch because she sank.
Actually, historically, you've got infamously Jack the Ripper, such a media sensation that all kinds of innocent people were accused by the mob of being Jack the Ripper. So
exactly. You're right.
Seems to be something in human nature. People are keen. People are keen to reveal the truth, but sometimes they get it wrong. So that's what we'll be talking about today. But before then, we'll be responding to our favourite comments of the past week on previous podcast episodes. And a little reminder to all of you listening at home that now we're doing the quiz live separately, hopefully every week, as its own episode. And you can feel free to go over to YouTube and join us in the quiz, in the live chat, when we do it every week. And these episodes for the main discussion will be their own thing and obviously put on a podcast platform of your choice to listen to at your leisure or to watch on YouTube. And of course, if you are watching on YouTube or on any podcast platform where you can leave a comment, please do leave a comment. Let us know what you think. Share your thoughts and your experiences. And in fact, you may be a web sleuth yourself if you're listening to this or watching us. Mm. Let us know if you are and what your particular area of sleuthery expertise might be.
Yes. Have you ever done any sleuthing yourself, Robin? You ever been a web sleuth?
No, not in that kind of way. Have you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's sometimes interesting. There's a fine line, isn't there, between looking at the kind of the rumour mill that's going around online, in particular you couldn't get away from it if you looked on social media in the last few weeks with a certain BBC personality. and there are a lot of people trying to find out the identity of who it is. Yeah. And actually, a lot of names were bandied about that weren't what's the word? Because there's not, like...
Culprit,
yeah, that's the right word. And in some cases, legal action has been taken already against people online. So you've got to be careful with sleuthing. You've got to be careful.
You know, it's funny. We Martin actually suggested this topic ages ago. It's on our list of ideas to discuss. And the timing, in a way, couldn't be better because at least in Britain, it's been in the headlines for the last couple of weeks. A particular celebrity presenter on TV has been involved in a non-scandal, essentially, but serious enough that, as Martin says, people online, these amateur sleuths trying to identify who the presenter might have been involved in this scandal, were accusing the wrong presenters who now are taking people to court for defamation. So, it can get serious.
Or saying in the headline, mystery presenter, and then showing a picture of someone who turned out wasn't the...
Yeah,
the person in question.
Not connected at all in any way to it, except that they work for the BBC.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so we might talk about that in more detail in the main discussion. But before that, and before we get to the comments, I've got a riddle
for
you and for all our lovely listeners.
Okay.
A riddle, which you almost certainly will be able to solve. Okay. Hope you got your thinking caps on, folks.
Hmm.
What kind of room has no doors or windows? What kind of room has no doors or windows?
Yeah. Okay. Let me think about that one.
You got an idea? Or are you just something in there? A little spark?
Oh, I mean, there's... Mm,
Okay. Well, okay. Let me know what you okay. think at the end of the episode. I shall reveal the answer after the main discussion. Cool. And before I ask you what comments you'd like to respond to this week, Martin, I want to say a big thank you to all of our YouTube members and Patreon supporters who are wunderbarer people. They are excellent, excellent folks. And especially big thanks to James, Rashad Najjar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Janie, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapia, Ahmad, Peaswad, Josh Tromatek, A Filthy Casual, Simon Workman, and Captain Wonky. Thank you so much for all of your support for all this time, and especially thank you to those named individuals and everybody else who supports us. You don't just get the pleasure of knowing you help keep this podcast going, as well as enabling us to make other videos, some of which sometimes YouTube really wouldn't like us to make. But you also get access to an exclusive, a little more interesting mini podcast, which you can listen to. If you haven't had enough of us talking, you can go and listen to that. And there's now, I think there's almost as many episodes of that as there are of the main podcast, well over 100 now. You to listen to, as well as some little behind-the-scenes tidbits, which we like to upload occasionally. But, Martinus.
Yes.
Before your voice disappears completely with your cold. Incidentally, I think I'm also sniffling a lot at the moment. My throat's a bit sore. So enjoy the stereo experience, everyone, of coughing and sniffing.
It's delightful, isn't it?
It's so delicious, isn't it?
People can accept it in the winter, but it's July. I mean, what are we doing?
This is a weird thing, isn't it? Yeah. No. Why good. Now? Of all the times. But, you know, just apologies. But also, you came here for the immersive experience of being in the room with people with colds.
Exactly.
And that's what we're here to deliver. It's, so, you know.
What's great is that you get the friendly banter and the chat without actually catching the cold. So what more could you want?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There you go. What comments would you like to respond away to?
I've got a comment from Case Closed 9342, who wrote,
"Oh yeah,
when I was in middle school, we had to write a poem, and I wrote a 4-stanza poem on cryptids." So we spoke about cryptids in our last episode.
We did, yeah.
And they can't remember the full poem, but they remember the first two lines. "Cryptids, cryptids, they're so fun. I wish I could get a glimpse of one." So that's a good start.
That's good.
I put a picture of Bigfoot on it, and the teacher hung it on the wall with other poems. Wish I could find it, and I'd post the full poem in the comments here. Well, if you do, I'd love to see a full poem about cryptids. And I'm sorry, my English, in terms of knowing what a 4-stanza poem is, I'm sure that you know, Robin, but I can't remember what a 4-stanza poem is. What's that?
Well, a stanza is just a verse, essentially.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's quite a long one, quite a long poem then.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. It's got off to a great start, though. In fact, I feel like that could be a fun song.
Yes.
Fun little pop song.
Or folk, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's folklore.
Folk song. Well, if it's a true folk song, it should end with the narrator dying or something.
Yes.
I feel like that's how folk songs always end on a sad note.
It tends to be, someone dying or the woman they love never coming back.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That could be.
They were eaten by a cryptid. That's what happened.
Indeed, indeed. I'm sure that's how it ended.
I've got a comment from the same episode about mysterious cryptids that might actually exist from Michaia Baron. I think that's how you say the name. It says, "The next cryptid episode, Robin the British Con, Martin's Dog, and the Riddle Trophy." which I think that's funny. The Riddle Trophy, it does exist. It's just, you know, Martin's the only one who knows where it might be.
Yes, the mystery trophy. What's the game called? The Crystal Maze. It's like that.
Oh yeah,
like that with one of those.
Where is it?
Yeah,
where
I had to collect them all. Yeah, I've got a comment from Roozy J, who writes, "I've never." So we spoke about Vegemite amongst other things, and your hatred for Vegemite when you tried it, Robin. And Roozy J says, "I've never tried Vegemite, but being Dutch, I love eating salted licorice, and it pains me to hear that most people from other countries can't stand it. Then again, I've been to Utah, where they act like root beer is actually just something people should drink out of free will. So maybe licorice is like that—an acquired taste." And I was thinking this. I like some weird flavored things, but salt licorice actually did catch me by surprise.
You knew about it before. I'd never heard of it until that comment.
Our good friend Sam who was on, used to do the 101 Facts. He bought some salted licorice back from Sweden. And it was, it's seriously acquired. But I think I would grow to really like it. I think I would grow to really like it. But it's incredibly salty. It's not like it's lightly dusted. It's like...
Right, intense.
It's been like infused with salt as opposed to like... scattered over it.
Yeah. Well, it's like sweet sours. I'm not a big fan of sours.
And they're sweet. Yeah.
You know, it's just not my thing. It's not a taste that I like. So I guess salted licorice makes sense. As it happens, I hate licorice.
Oh, that's
and I can't see why you'd add salt to it.
No, it makes it definitely more acquired. Are there any weird things that are an acquired taste that you actually like? That you're like, most people don't like this, but I do.
I can't think of anything. I'm fairly boring, I'm afraid.
So all the things that people are like, that's an acquired taste, you'd probably be like, no, don't like it. Like, do you like anchovies?
No.
Do you like olives?
No. I'm really boring. I don't like all these things.
I really like those two. Those two things, actually, we both really like. So maybe I have
I will eat olives now. They're not so bad, I can't eat them. But there was a time in my life where I couldn't bear the thought of them, or couldn't have anything that had touched olives. You know, they put olives on pizza sometimes, and I always peel them off and I'd eat the slice without the olives, but it still tastes like olive.
Olives. Yeah. Me and my brother have got this rock. I don't know where it came from, but we've got this long standing. I guess it's a joke now, but that it was each of us who said that we didn't like olives when we were a kid. So we're both like, no, I liked it. You were the one who said you didn't like them. I loved them when I was a kid. You hated them. And we both this thing that we liked them, but the other one of us hated them. So I don't know where the memories come from. I think it was like, must have been when we were maybe even like four or younger. It dates back to, and this argument has been going on for 25 years plus.
Wow.
Yeah. So we've both got this memory of each other hating olives, but us loving them, which is very strange. We probably just both like them, right?
Yeah, I mean, you both like them now, so maybe. Yeah.
It's a source of argument, you know. Usually whenever we meet up, actually, whenever olives are involved in any conversation, it comes up. It's like, well, you hate
you
them,
actually have you arguments like, about like, insisting on being, like, you were the one.
Let's order a pizza and, oh yeah, but you're not going to have olives, are you? Because you hate them and you always have done. No, you were the one who hates. You know, it goes like that and then continues for a while. It's the only thing we ever argue about is olives. Yeah.
Well, if that's the only thing you ever argue about, maybe that's useful.
Could be worse.
To have that one thing that channels all your hatred for each other in attention into that one thing, and then you're fine on every
into
other topic.
Into a single black pitted olive.
I think the one thing that my brother and I seriously argue about is The Last Jedi.
Oh, really? Okay, I can understand that. That makes sense.
It's funny. Anyway,
are you a fan and he isn't? I imagine that's the way around it is.
That is exactly the way it is. But I'm not even a diehard defender. Like, I don't. I don't think it's perfect, and I think it's I think it's very flawed. I just don't think it's terrible, like so many people seem to think.
Well, you can see the good in things, Robin. That's one of your good qualities.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say.
You know,
I tend to focus on the negatives, though. Ask my wife; she might say something different.
Chairman Mao was good in a way. it's the contrarianism of youth, isn't it?
You want
to be a contrarian because you're taught to do that in debating class.
Yeah, I think it's wearing off. I'm still a bit contrarian about some things.
I tell you who's a great contrarian. That's Alex Jones of the Super Show podcast.
From the Super Show podcast. I was resisting mentioning him. But,
you can say anything with Jonesy and he'll take the opposing standpoint. It's not in a malicious way. It's just providing that viewpoint. And he's very good at it as well. He's very convincing. You can actually have an argument with Jonesy. And then afterwards he's like, no, I totally agree with you. I'm just saying the viewpoint. You're like, what?
Yeah.
why have we spent so much time on this? Yeah.
It goes on forever with Jonesy. He really sticks.
Oh, yeah. I love those conversations with Jonesy. Yeah. They're great.
Oh, fantastic. And the podcast is fantastic too. And I think they do argue sometimes in a very Jonesy takes the bait and the others argue about it. Speaking of, well, there's no transition here. I was trying to think of a smooth segue into the main topic, but I can't think of one. So do you want to talk about Web Sleuths?
I think we should.
Yeah, I think we should. Okay. times that web sleuths ruined lives. Ooh. Well, before we get stuck into the nitty-gritty, might be worth just explaining to anyone who doesn't know what we mean by the term web sleuth. And by that, we mean an amateur detective, a normal member of Joe Public who is passionate about a particular mystery or crime and uses the power of the internet, because we live in the information age, to solve said mystery or crime. And sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong, and when they get it wrong, it can have serious consequences for the individuals that they name as the culprits or the suspects.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to talk about today. So this isn't, for the record, I think, this isn't intended to be a kind of tirade against the concept of amateur sleuthing, because as much as professional police forces might be frustrated by amateur detectives, members of the public who are passionate but a little misguided because they don't know the correct procedures for investigating a crime. Nonetheless, I'm sure there are dozens of examples of where an ordinary member of the public has helped the police solve a crime in a really significant way, or especially when that case has been closed.
I mean, there's so many high-profile cases now that have been, helped in one way or another by people sleuthing or by investigative journalists, and probably the most famous one of the last, like, what, I guess, what, 10 years it came out? 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
Is the episode, series one of Serial. Do you know Serial, the podcast?
I've heard of, but I haven't actually listened to it.
So, yeah, so a guy called Adnan Syed was convicted of a murder of one of his classmates way back when, I think about 25 years ago now, maybe the late 90s. I don't want to get it wrong, but basically he was dead and buried metaphorically in jail, basically gave an account of why there were some inconsistencies in the account and who, and also who could possibly be the other suspects, which is often the case in investigative podcasts, which often causes some issues when we name a few suspects and people jump on a bandwagon, right, with a particular suspect.
Yeah.
But to cut a long story short, after all his appeals were declined, etc., he was eventually released from jail last year.
Oh, right.
And a big part of that was, the notoriety of the podcast and millions of people downloading it.
Yeah.
So a little bit more than sleuthing, but there's a huge community around, supposedly getting justice for him for being wrongly imprisoned.
Yeah.
So can do good.
Well, that's fantastic. That's really good news. And actually, it's mostly communities that I think we're going to focus on today. These online communities of people, not just individual sleuths, but communities of people. And in a way, that may be part of the problem. Obviously, it's great when people work together. You can share the workload and you can share information in a much broader way, which is fantastic. Except when you also have too many people, too many cooks can spoil the broth, I guess. And some people can, herd mentality can set in. And some people can point in one direction and say, look at this, and then everyone follows them.
Oh my goodness, yeah, that looks right. And then, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I harmlessly dabble in, I've never done anything amateur sleuthing myself, but I'm very interested in Jack the Ripper, and there's a huge community, international, of people interested in trying to solve that mystery.
Of course.
And I'm really into it, and I love that. I don't do any myself, but I read all other people's research into it. But that's harmless in a way, because so long ago, you're never really going to know for sure, and whoever you name as a suspect isn't not really going to cause offense to anybody living today, because it was very nearly 150 years ago. Whereas there are people living today, and as recently as 2017, do you remember the Unite the Right rally, Martin?
Yes.
Charlottesville?
Yes. Yeah. That was a terrible ordeal, wasn't it?
Terrible, yes. A protest rally where right-wing white supremacists got together to unite the right and spread their message, and a counter-protest formed, and one of the right-wing protesters got in a car and drove through the counter-protest and killed one person, a young woman called Heather Hare, and injured 35 other people. And this is the incident about which Donald Trump notoriously said there were fine people on both sides.
Yes.
racists and a murderer on one side and not racists and victims on the other. But that's kind of beside the point, because in the immediate aftermath, like literally the day of the rally, it was very well covered by the press, and there were lots of photographs by paparazzi. I don't know if you call them paparazzi, actually. Photographers.
Yeah.
Photojournalists took lots and lots of pictures, and of course there was footage. And all was online, on mass media, very available. And a bunch of citizens decided they would get together and identify the people in the photographs, because they all dispersed very quickly and the police didn't arrest them. Partly because I think you do have the right to protest, but mainly because they just got away too quickly. And the police were distracted by the murderer who drove his car through a crowd. So it was mostly focused on Twitter, actually, was the forum through which most of this investigation took place. And one of the people who was of particular focus of the amateur sleuths was a bearded man wearing an engineering t-shirt from the University of Arkansas. And there was only one photograph, I think, where he was visible, but his face was a bit blurred. However, he looked like he could be identified, and the t-shirt would be a clue. So people online identified him as Kyle Quinn, who's a professor of engineering research at the University of Arkansas, about 1,100 miles away from Charlottesville.
Right.
So he could have traveled there, and certainly the man in the photo was wearing an engineering research center t-shirt from the University of Arkansas, so he must have had some connection to it. But Kyle Quinn, the professor, was absolutely at home
there.
In Arkansas. He had witnesses. He was with friends and family on the night of the Charlottesville protest. However, he was identified on Twitter and Instagram, and he was quickly doxxed with loads of horrible messages, people accusing him of things, people calling for him to be sacked. His personal information was shared online, including, I think, his address.
Oh, dear.
And, of course, he was called a racist. And made the news online, at least. Luckily, mass media didn't report on it, partly because the things were moving too fast and partly because journalistic standards exist and they had to corroborate things before they throw around these accusations. I know it's shocking, but there are some standards for journalists.
Well, we'll come on to that.
Luckily, no real harm came to him, because unlike some of the other protesters who were correctly identified and lost their jobs, the University of Arkansas, because he was at an event, they knew that he was innocent. So they were able to come out in support of him. And in fact, it was the university saying, "We stand by this professor because we know he wasn't there at the rally."
Oh, how horrible. There's nothing you can do. It spreads like wildfire, doesn't it? And it's online.
Yeah, it does. And there's nothing you can do legally either, because although it can be abused, to sue someone for defamation is a good way to clear your name, right?
Yeah.
But when it's anonymous users on the internet,
you can't
do that. And it was a scary 3 or 4 days for him and his family when all their personal information was being put out online, and you've got all these quite aggressive and abusive messages being sent online. And how do you know when those messages being sent online are going to translate into people turning up at your door, doing things to your house or doing things to you and your family because they think you're a white supremacist when you're not? And of course, we'll sidestep the whole debate, but it's one that I find interesting about the response by these particular amateur sleuths. Obviously, it's a very emotional thing because they're reacting to racism and white supremacy.
Of course, yeah.
But of course, it's always that fine line between, we should be tolerant except of intolerance. And then it's like, well, when does your intolerance of intolerance become intolerance in and of itself and should be pilloried? It's a great example of where people can go too far by trying to do the right thing, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah. So that's my first example. What's yours, Martin?
Wow. So yeah. So mine relates to a really, really serious event. And actually another what you class as a terrorist event, the Boston bombings. So April 2013, I'm sure that people know about this, but you know, two pressure cooker bombs exploded near the finish line of the Boston Marathon, and three people were killed immediately afterwards, including a young boy. So really, really sad. And of course, lots of other people were severely injured, and it was a horrible, horrible ordeal. Of course, in the aftermath, they didn't know who had carried out the bombings. And so it was a big police manhunt. And of course, people got online and were looking at the footage from the CCTV cameras from around the area. And groups, as you mentioned, you know, there's a various sleuthing groups, but one on the website Reddit called Find the Boston Bombers was created, where people could, you know, discuss information and look at what's going on. So the source of where this particular incident came from isn't known which user it came from, but there were various people participating in this with their, you know, theories flying about the place on who could have done it based on the footage that they saw. And this is where the name of Sunil Tripathi, who was a student at Brown University, an undergrad, comes into this story. So Sunil had been hadn't been seen since March 16th and actually had been reported missing by his family, and had left his phone and his wallet in his student accommodation at the time. And so his family had set up pages on social media, on Facebook specifically, and also I think they posted a video on YouTube as well, urging people to try and find their son. And the sleuths on Reddit got wind of this person who'd, you know, who hadn't been seen, and looked at the footage and cross-referenced the two. And then it quickly became a thing that that Sunil was one of the Boston bombers. That became kind of hearsay on this subreddit. And you know how it is, you know, it spread like wildfire. And by the Wednesday after the bombing, on April 17th, 3,000 people had joined this particular subreddit. And then it only grew from there. So the FBI had released the image of the suspects. Sunil's name was being bandied around. And he does resemble, like, if you look at the Boston bombers, he resembles the younger of the two. And soon after that, the Tripathi family started getting phone calls, and they started getting angry messages on the Facebook page where they're looking for their son. This Facebook page that's dedicated to finding their son who had gone missing in, you know, almost a month earlier. And so we were talking a little bit earlier about media codes of conduct and ethics and standards. But this Reddit subreddit caught the attention of a BuzzFeed reporter who shared a tweet naming Sunil as the primary suspect from his own account. I won't name and shame him because I don't think I need to, but that happened. And then from this, that reached more mainstream news outlets. So people from Dig, Politico, Newsweek, NBC, and BuzzFeed were basically saying that he was one of the suspects. Well, the
police really blew up.
The police were looking for, which is pretty bad. Of course, it turned out that Sunil, if anyone knows, wasn't one of the Boston bombers. He actually went on like a rampage, killed a policeman, and had a shootout in like a residential area. And then I think one of them was killed then, and then the other one was found under a boat in someone's back garden, I think.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
And then they were executed, weren't they? But anyway, unfortunately the body of Sunil was found in a stretch of river in Seekonk River behind the Wyndham Garden Providence Hotel. So they used dental records to confirm that it was him. And his family then confirmed that actually it was a result of suicide and that he'd been having, suffering from, you know, severe depression and stuff like that. So it's a case of sleuths making what already was a horrendous situation for the family,
yeah,
100 times yeah. worse by claiming that he was, you know, this terrible, terrible person that had carried out an atrocious terrorist attack, and then yeah. were being flooded with hatred through these pages that were set up to try and look for him. So it's just a really, really horrible situation, and really a lesson in the dangers of not only for the you know, the subject of the sleuthing, but also for their families as well, to have to deal with all this horrible vitriol. So yeah, that's
awful. Yeah. And just, it's like rubbing salt into the wound, isn't it, really? He's already so depressed, he's so little self-worth that he's ended his life. And then after his death, people think he's a terrorist who murders people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, doesn't.
If there is an afterlife, that's what a great way to get there and look back on Earth and go, what? What do they think?
Hold on a second. Yeah. Yeah. No, really, a really horrible one.
Poor family. Yeah. The suffering there. That's just. That's dark. That's a dark one. I didn't know about that story, actually, about the misidentification and the.
I remember at the time. I remember there being like these names being thrown out, and then it's suddenly the narrative changing to someone to other people, and it was like,
right.
I remember it like seeing that at the time, and them having the wrong name and thinking, oh, that's not good. But I actually had no idea that this was a missing person that had killed themselves. No idea.
Yeah, that's completely news to me.
Yeah.
And now, 10 years later. They can relive the pain. Yay. Because we're bringing it up. No, I'm joking, of course. As in, well, I'm not. Oh, dear. You know what I mean. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Thank you.
Luckily, I don't have anything else that's that dark.
Okay. Probably luckily. For
I do worry that there must be some examples out there of people who've, you know, been living and depressed and then accused of something that's caused them to end their own lives. I feel like that must have existed. I mean, in a way it has. I mean, we know there's the great scandals of say the Victorian era, where, you know, the nobility have been accused of murder or an illegal act at the time, such as homosexuality, and then they've ended their own lives, and actually obviously there's nothing wrong at all. But
Jeffrey Epstein.
That wasn't what I was thinking of.
He was accused of something and then ended his own life. Yeah. Or both of those could be false. As in, he wasn't innocent.
Yeah, well, and he didn't
of the accusations, and he didn't end his own life.
I don't know how to respond. I'm just like, I'm not sure. What happened to what's her face? Ghislaine. Maxwell. How are you saying? Claire Maxwell, yeah.
She was in prison.
She's jailed, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She's still alive.
Yeah, she's still alive.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure she's still alive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
She hasn't been found in a cell yet. Okay.
I like the fact that we've just we spoke about her a few times. So we've largely just kind of been like, oh, yeah. Just kind of forgotten, which is quite nice, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some people aren't worth remembering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Denied bail as a flight risk.
Good. Nice.
Yeah. Good.
So my next example is a young woman called Maura Murray. Have you heard of this?
No.
I hadn't heard of this, actually, but fairly celebrated case. And I think there was a Netflix documentary made about her a few years ago, which really kind of raised the profile. And she went missing in 2004. And she's an interesting early example of web sleuths coming to the fore because she was young, pretty, and white. So she caught the imagination of the mass media and the public at large. And in the relatively early days of internet fora, where people can get together and share information, 2004, people really got stuck into solving her case. And they're still trying to solve it. It is unsolved. They don't know what happened to her. She's presumed dead, but they've never found the body.
Right.
And they've never been able to properly reconstruct what happened. It's quite a mystery. So it's understandable why people got so invested in it. But people got a little too invested in it. and a few bad things have happened. And it's, I think I like this as an example of where good intentions can go wrong. Because it's not that, although lots of suspects have been named, including her ex-boyfriend at the time, no one's been directly accused of anything yet.
Okay, okay.
What has happened, though, is that in their zealousness to uncover every detail, these amateur sleuths together, working collaboratively, have managed to find and, with good intentions, publish her medical records, her sexual history.
Is that written down?
Well, they got her friends, they interviewed her friends and people who knew her, and then they've published the information online.
Right.
And including details about her eating disorder and her mental health. Okay. And you can understand why they investigate those things, because it might seem pertinent to the mystery about, you know, what happened to her and did somebody do something to her? And you kind of want to know who were her partners and what was her frame of mind when she went missing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's understandable why they looked into this. But the poor family, of course, her sister and her dad in particular, who still live in the place where she went missing, just woke up one morning to find that all these details that in some cases they didn't know their missing daughter or sister suddenly is all online for everyone to see. And this is a huge movement. There's tens of thousands of people involved in this. And for a time, there's one particular fella who's kind of led the charge here and even published a book about it in 2016. And his name's James Renner, and he's purely an amateur sleuth. He's just an enthusiast, but he's kind of positioned himself through dogged hard work as like the authority on this case, and published this book. But one of the things he did was that he was one of the first people to go to the town and start interviewing neighbors and people who knew her. A lot of them didn't cooperate, understandably, but in particular, her dad didn't cooperate.
Interesting. Okay.
Because his reasoning being that I just don't want to be, like, I've already told the police, I'm with the police, my daughter's still missing, it's quite painful, I don't want to talk to strangers about this. But possibly because he didn't cooperate with Mr. Renner, when he wrote up his blog posts and then eventually published this book, he made a lot of insinuations about the dad. Perhaps even within the legal boundaries of defamation, implying that maybe he was involved with her disappearance in some respect. And at one point, there were claims going around online that her dad had sexually abused her. And that was a motive for getting rid of her. Quite the claim.
I mean, it's
unfounded.
Yeah, no, it's all just. Oh, but yeah, this could have happened, and then suddenly it becomes something.
Yeah, and he's still involved with the police trying to solve the case. But for a time, tensions were very high between this group of amateur sleuths with an earnest intention and the family members who just partly want to move on, get over it, and partly also are being accused of these horrible things.
Yeah.
And back in 2019, Twitter introduced a new privacy policy that allowed interested parties to request the removal of Twitter posts that breached privacy standards or whatever. Mm-hmm. And one day, particularly this fellow James Renner, but a bunch of enthusiasts who are interested in the case of Maura Murray, a bunch of their posts got taken down.
Okay.
By Twitter. And they immediately responded and said, oh, there's all these people, including her ex-boyfriend, who we name as suspects. They're trying to cover it up and look at the suspicious behavior. They're taking down all these posts where we're producing evidence that links them to the disappearance. So this became a thing, a little bit of a Twitter storm. And then it emerged that it was her sister requesting these posts get taken down, or a lot of them. And her reasoning was simply that somehow these sleuths had got hold of loads of photographs of Maura
Yeah.
And they were publishing these photographs on Twitter in a kind of look at all these photographs of the victim who were trying to, you know, this is what she looked like. These are events, things she was doing at these certain dates. And let's see if we can piece together the mystery. But the sister was looked at it and said, where the hell did they get all these family photos from? You know, and the sister acknowledged that some of these photos are photos we provided to the police. So,
yeah,
you know, they're in the public domain already. We get that. But a lot of these have never been seen before online. Right. How on earth did they get them? So the sister back, and this is recently as 2019, and the Maura disappeared in 2004. But the sister was clearly hurt and making these claims to Twitter to take down these posts. And it's perfectly reasonable, but the unintended side effect of that was that a bunch of other people were being accused of trying to cover up their involvement in her disappearance by these amateur sleuths. As it happens, the family seem to have repaired their relationships because there's now an annual, I think it's on the 4th, maybe the 3rd, annual gathering in the town where Maura disappeared, where they all get together and have a kind of festival to share information and, I guess, celebrate.
Yeah, I guess that's a weird word, isn't it? Yeah.
The movement. And there's an official website as well, which is properly curated. And the family members, the dad and the sister, do attend this festival, annual festival. So they seem to have mended their problems. And,
I think they probably understand that, as you say, the intentions are good. Mm. And in general, it's people that, people that are fascinated by it, but also want to see some kind of justice.
Yeah.
Which is they're on the same page there. And just having people, you know, have that memory of someone that was so dear to you and want to help, regardless if they get things wrong, is probably some kind of comfort. In a way.
And I would assume it's this pattern of grief. It's now been long enough that they've got through the stage where they just want to forget and be like, no, stop bringing this up. And they've come through that, and now they're, like you say, they're grateful for the attention that people are giving to keep.
Yeah, and the case doesn't die if people are still interested, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And if you persevere for long enough, hopefully it may even get solved.
Yes, indeed.
So yeah, and people online listening to us may already be familiar with this case because it's been quite a sensation for quite some time now, at least in the US. But I'd not heard of it before, and I can't imagine. Similar to the Boston bombing case, being the family and just waking up in the morning and not knowing what people are saying about your relative who's missing, and then as it turns out about yourself.
I know
it's just like I would find that I can imagine that being an incredibly, incredibly anxious and stressful experience, because you're already in a terrible place and then you go to bed not knowing what you're going to see on the internet in the morning.
I guess it's a tough one, though, because statistically, as you said, investigating the ex-boyfriend, family members overwhelmingly, partners or ex-partners, and then family members are overwhelmingly the most likely people to have done something. So it's like it's not unfounded that people go to them as the key suspects when they're sleuthing, because statistically they're most likely to be. But it causes the most harm if you accuse someone who is so close if they didn't do it, right?
No, that's it. And that's why I find this interesting, because I think this is a great example of people who mean well and just don't think about the consequences, because they don't have professional training or professional standards that they are required to meet. They're just amateur sleuths with good intentions and insufficient experience in how to properly present a case before you make your accusations insinuations, as well as unintended invasion of privacy.
True. I mean, the kind of the opposite of that was the JonBenet Ramsey case, when the police were so scared to accuse the Ramseys of potentially killing their daughter, even when you look at the evidence and it's like, oof, okay, the ransom note was written in potentially the handwriting of the mother, quite possibly, and other bits and pieces too. You know, there wasn't any form of, it didn't look like there's any form of break into the house, not an outside intruder. So it kind of narrows it down to people that knew the house intimately. So there's the opposite, where if people don't look at close members, they can miss that opportunity.
It's tricky, isn't it? And it's kind of, is a famous case in the UK, but Madeleine McCann, for example, it's a case where it's still open, still unsolved, but it's really been the family of Madeleine McCann have driven that case. The police would have abandoned it years ago, just left it unsolved. But they're still trying to find out what happened to the little girl, Madeleine McCann, when she went missing in Europe.
I mean, they've got their prime suspect, haven't they?
They do, which is remarkable. But it's taken, I think it was German police, wasn't it, identified the suspect. Yep. But she went missing in Spain or something, was
Portugal.
It? Portugal. Sorry, yeah. And of course, because she was a British citizen, the British police were involved. But an international effort here to try to identify what happened to the girl and who did it. And it's a good reminder that that case has been controversial in the UK because a lot of people have said, oh, the parents just can't let go. You know, and or they're using it for their own monetary ends because they have had book deals and things out of it, or interview deals at least. But at the same time, if the family hadn't kept the case alive, we would never get close to solving it. And in the case of Madeleine McCann, because it's the family, there's a kind of free pass. You know, it's like you have an obvious vested interest in solving this case. Go for it. And so my question would be, what's your opinion on the line? Where do we draw the line in who is allowed to investigate and bring claims, who isn't a professional assigned the task?
That's the thing. Most leaves are there for the entertainment value, right? That's where the line is. It's like, this is affecting real people in real life and often has really tragic, especially when there's missing people. It's missing adults in mysterious circumstances, often has a tragic end. And so it's like, I think there's a lot of people just do not understand the real life consequences. I think that's the issue. But I mean, everyone has a right to be able to have their say, but it's just as soon as that becomes accusationary or, you know, gets back to the family or those in closely related and has those real life consequences, that's where it's tricky. But I guess there isn't really a line. You can't say you can't look into this as a sleuth. You've got to, you know, you can look at the information yourself online.
Ben, should there be a gatekeeper? Should there be some system in place that allows or that vets the theories and the evidence put forward by amateur sleuths?
Yeah. I guess the question is just, would that be self-regulating within the community? Should there be the equivalent of moderators who are like, don't be ridiculous. We don't want that kind of content around here that's just purely speculative, conspiratorial.
I mean, I'm sure there are. I mean, at least you mentioned the Reddit one for the Boston bombers. There must have been. But clearly in the case of the Boston bombers, they failed. The moderators.
Yes.
Did not succeed.
Exactly.
So how do you?
I don't think you can. With the way that the internet is today, it's very difficult to put a lid on these things when people get the ball rolling.
It's
right?
Like Pandora's box.
If there's interest in it, and it starts moving in a certain direction, it's very hard to stop that momentum, even if the direction's definitely wrong. What do you think? I think there should be a.
I agree with everything you said, and. I think ideally, there should be some moderator or gatekeeper who filters all the trash from the genuinely potentially useful stuff. But I don't know how on earth you enforce that, because as we know, the internet is the Wild West. It's just not a place that, try as they might, it's not a place that governments or any kind of law enforcement can easily control. And I think that's a good thing that they can't control it overall. I think the net benefit of the freedom of the internet is. It's a net benefit. But this is a great example where the problem with the internet is that not only can bad actors cause harm, but well-intentioned actors can cause harm. And I just don't know how you solve it. And I wish we didn't have to live in a world where it was like the flu, where you just... You have to accept it as a fact of life.
I just had to sneeze when you said flu.
You should have done it for dramatic effect. That would have been great.
Yes.
I agree with everything you said. And yeah, there's clearly a line when it starts to cause harm, but can you stop it before it causes harm? Because it's all about sharing information, and you don't know what information someone's going to share until they share it. And then once they've shared it, it's there. It's out there in the open for people to disseminate and act accordingly.
Do you reckon Alex likes a bit of sleuthing?
Yeah. It's what he's doing now, I imagine. He said he was ill, but no. He's
actually just sleuthing.
He's out there, out in the street.
Well, to be fair, he did spend the weekend dressed as a pirate, so.
He did, actually.
It's one step.
And you know what? Our listeners can make up their own minds about whether or not you just told the truth.
Oh, good stuff. No, let us know your sleuthing stories at home. I'm intrigued to know if there are any sleuths out there among you, and you know what what the wildest theories are. The most ridiculous theories would be a good one to hear of some of those. We were like, come on now.
Yeah, what's favorite theory? What's your favorite unsolved mystery and favorite theory as a potential solution to it? Let us know in the comments.
And ridiculous ones as well, that are just so stupid.
Yeah. And feel free to tweet at us too, at JInterestingYT, or I'm at All Time Robert.
And I'm at Mod Interesting.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter, or maybe we'll set up a Threads at some point too. That seems to be a thing now.
Yeah, that's a thing, isn't it? That's a thing.
Twitter's going to the dark side. as an aside. No. We can talk about it another time. Sorry. Yeah, we'll do that. Would you like to know the answer, the solution?
Yes. No,
indeed,
what
to
was
the
it
mystery
again?
Of the riddle.
It didn't immediately come to mind, so.
Okay. Well, I'll read it again, and then maybe something will pop into your head.
Okay, right.
What kind of room has no doors or windows?
Not quite a room. It's going to be a play on the words with the word room, isn't it?
Yep, you're on the right tracks.
Room. Bedroom. Bedroom. No, it does. Living room. That does. So it's not going to be in a house, is it? It's not going to be a house room. In fact, it's not going to be a room at all. But I don't know what it is. Something room.
It is a mushroom.
Oh, of course it's a mushroom. Yes.
I like mushrooms. Done. That's why I chose that riddle.
That's nice. I like that one. That's good.
Oh, thank you.
That's
good. It's dumb, but it also makes sense. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember which. What is it? What nut? It can't be what nut has a hole in it. That's too obvious. What nut has a hole in it?
Donut?
Donut, yeah.
Okay. A ring donut, I don't think that's, at least.
Yeah. Some don't.
Some donuts are just bowls.
Indeed, they are. That's true.
Although, what's that definition of a hole? Because if there's a filling, there's a hole where they inject the filling. But that's then filled with the filling. So is it a hole?
No, that doesn't count, does it?
No, okay. Just checking.
No.
I'm always.
The hole has to have an exit wound, Robin.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Martin, for your great, terrifying and sad story.
And yours. Slightly more uplifting, actually, the second one.
It was good.
A little bit more.
Yeah, it had a bit of a happy ending.
I think so. Yeah.
They reconciled, for now at least. And thank you all for listening. Thank you all for joining us. And thank you all for your wonderful support, especially our Patreon members and YouTube members. Thank you. And we'll see you next time. Hopefully next week we will have both a live quiz and a normal episode.
Awesome.
Of course, we shall have a Patreon and YouTube member exclusive, a little more interesting for you very soon. Ciao for now.
Bye-bye.
See you next time.
Coolio, right? Let's just stop that.